listening to the Apollo Podcast Network. One.
What is going on? Welcome to another episode of the Launchpad Podcast brought to you by Apollo Media. Make sure you follow our official Twitter account at Apollo HOU. I'm your host, Taylor Pate. You can find me on Twitter at Taylor L. Pate. Tonight, I am joined by Britt, and you know her on Twitter as Britt Robotista. You can also find her as part of Step Back Sisters, another fantastic podcast to check out. Britt, how's it going tonight?
I'm good. How are you?
I am doing pretty good. The USA or the US men's national team finally won an exhibition game. They finally did what people expected them to do. That's something that we're going to get to talking about tonight. Some other stuff that we are going to be talking about in our first segment. We've got a report from Sham Sharania of The Athletic that the Rockets are aggressively trying to move up to take Cade Cunningham. They're also discussing some Eric Gordon deals. We've got John Wall liking some tweets about him being traded to the Clippers. After that, we've got some stuff coming out from Sterling Brown's Instagram Live. There was some talk about Jalen Green and you know, saying that he was already the known pick and all this kind of stuff. So, you know, we can kind of talk about Sterling's reaction there. Tad Brown, former CEO of the Rockets, is signing with the Sixers. Same place as Daryl Morey. We're going to kind of discuss what goes on there. And then in our last segment, we're going to talk about Team USA, like I mentioned, who has struggled to start the exhibition matches. And we're also going to talk about the finals. You know, the Suns are up 2-1, and there's a lot of exciting stuff going on there. So I guess to kind of get started, Shams today reports that the Rockets, you know, they're aggressively trying to move up to the number one spot and take Cade Cunningham. This comes after yesterday it was kind of mentioned that the Rockets were not willing to give up what it takes to move to number one. What do you think of the Rockets potentially trading from number two to number one, and what do you think that package would look like?
So I'm not necessarily a big fan of that. I mean, I think a lot of it is surrounding, I guess, the rumors that the Pistons really like Jalen Green and they would rather get him versus Cade Cunningham. My sort of thought process is, why should the Rockets give up a ton just to move up one spot, especially since I know that a lot of folks say that Cade Cunningham is a step above, or I guess significantly above the rest of the top four. I'm not necessarily one who agrees with that. We can use another example from a couple of seasons ago with Luka and with Trae Young that, you know, ultimately speaking, you know, the Mavericks and the Hawks were able to get really good players, even though they didn't necessarily, you know, they ultimately, you know, switch places, but they were actually a couple of spots, you know, separate from each other. So I don't know. I feel as though the Rockets shouldn't necessarily give up a ton to go up one spot. If they really want to, then, you know, I can't really say anything for them to not do it. But ultimately, if they give up one pick, you know, either this season's 23 or 24 pick or next season's, you know, whichever pick that they want to choose from the first or second round, that's fine. But I really don't want to see them give it, or, you know, beyond the second pick, which they would be trading in order to get Cade for number one. But beyond that, I don't want to see them giving up a ton of assets just to get a player that essentially the Pistons could just pick Jalen Green number one and it wouldn't necessarily matter too much.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you make a really good point because, you know, a few seasons ago, Luca and Trey, kind of the infamous, like, this is our guy and this is our guy. These are the people that we want, but if you don't take him, we're going to take him. Or, you know, if you don't trade with us, we're going to take him and stuff like that. Ultimately, both teams came out like well ahead. Like, it was fantastic for both teams. They both got their guy. They both, you know, did what they did to swap places, but really and truly there wasn't a wrong pick there. And so I really think that if the Rockets view Cade Cunningham as that guy and Detroit doesn't, there's really no reason to trade. You know, if Detroit says, hey, we're going to take him, you know, unless you trade with us. Okay, you know what? We've got maybe one pick this season, and at most their own pick back, which is a lot more valuable to them than it is to the Rockets. Because trading for the Detroit pick that the Rockets have allows them to get out of the Stepien rule and be able to trade more future picks. And if they are, you know, planning on, you know, being a contender anytime soon, then they're going to need those picks to have flexibility. So I definitely think that there is a path there, but some of the stuff that I've seen thrown out today on Twitter and in some of the articles have been just, I mean, a haul. An absolute haul. And in my opinion, the two, Green and Cunningham, are a lot closer. You know, they might be technically a tier apart, but just like Luca and Trey, I don't think you can go wrong with either one. I think regardless of the pick there, there's a reason that these two guys are being discussed at the top of the draft. Now I know Rockets Twitter has been, you know, Mobley versus Green, but obviously these two teams seem like they're putting some sort of premium on perimeter play over big man play. And so to me, maybe one pick this season and Detroit's pick back, and that's as far as I'm willing to go. I think anything beyond that is not worth the capital that you're investing just to move up one spot for a guy that Detroit supposedly is not, you know, just 100% on taking. That's just my take there. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I was saying I agree with you. And I think the other thing too is that folks who are wanting to give a ton of picks away or, you know, potential players, are they not remembering that we are a 17-win team this season, and giving away a ton of assets is not an appropriate sort of thing to do? Right. Even if, I mean, if he was like 5 or 10 steps above, or there was a poor draft beyond number one, then that's one thing. But there's really good players 2 through 4 that the Rockets have an opportunity to get regardless. So I just don't see the reason why we would want to trade for a ton of players and give up a ton of assets where we could potentially use those in the future to build the team further.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And you know, in the upcoming years, the Rockets are potentially likely, I mean, probably likely, to be a lottery team as it is. So, you know, those are more than likely picks that are going to convey, because they'd likely only be top 3 or top 5 protected. And it's just too much risk for a team that doesn't have that core together yet. Another part of the article that Shams released today was that Eric Gordon has been discussed in some trade deals. Now, it was kind of unclear whether or not that was involving Detroit or this was separate, but given the stuff that came out earlier this week saying that the Rockets were talking to the Pacers about the 13th pick, there's an obvious connection there with Eric Gordon, you know, being from Indiana. And I think that to me feels like the most likely landing place for Eric Gordon. That's also where his pizza place is. I mean, not that really matters, but There's an obvious connection there. That being said, it probably is going to take, you know, Eric Gordon plus another one of the another one of this year's picks, and who knows, you know, beyond that, to move up to 13. How do you feel about something like that?
I mean, I guess I'm sort of neutral about it. I think ultimately Eric is going to be leaving sooner than later, and if Indiana is a good fit and we can get a good return from it, then I'm completely fine with it. I guess I sort of have the similar feeling about it that I do with, you know, the training up to number one to get Cade, although maybe a little less passionately about it. Ultimately, I feel like, you know, Eric, and he will want to go to a team that is in playoff contention. And I think even if the Rockets, you know, somehow get Cade or even, you know, Green or Mobley or whoever, it's going to be a year or two before the Rockets can be, you know, even in like the play-in position spot, if we're trying to be realistic. So I think ultimately speaking, it would be an interesting trade. I mentioned that, you know, one of the things that the Rockets could do is to trade, you know, if Brogdon is interested and we don't keep a lot of the veteran players like Olynyk or DJ Augustine this season, a Brogdon 13 pick, or a Brogdon trade to get the 13 pick for Eric Gordon, and then I guess the 23rd or the 24th pick would match salary-wise. But mm-hmm. I guess the question is if Brogdon would actually want to go to this team, or if he would be, you know, if that would be like, oh, we would need to flip him for someone else. But I don't know. I mean, I've thought about it a little bit. Ultimately, it doesn't make me upset if we let go of Eric Gordon, and when that happens, it'll happen. But I guess ultimately speaking, I just want to get at least a decent return and not just give up a ton of stuff just to get the 13th pick.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. And I guess, you know, the Pacers have kind of some discovering to do for themselves. You know, they kind of went through a tumultuous situation with their head coach, and they're just one of those teams that are, you know, playoff you know, attenders. You know, they get to the playoffs, but they haven't made noise, they haven't taken that next step to be one of those, you know, teams that you expect to see in the Eastern Conference Finals or anything like that. And so I think they have a little bit of, you know, just self-discovery to do, kind of figure out where they're at, and how they're going to put their pieces together moving forward. Maybe Eric Gordon fits into that. He certainly fits into their timeline a lot better than he fits into the Rockets' timeline. So I certainly think he will be on the move sooner rather than later. Another veteran for the Rockets, John Wall, he's kind of been in some discussions here and there. You know, the Clippers were one of the, you know, talked about landing places for him potentially. And there was a series of tweets that came out recently, and it involved John Wall being traded to the Clippers. And none other than Optimus Dime himself liked these tweets or this tweet on Twitter. And so, you know, there's a little water behind this theory, I guess, that John Wall no longer wants to be here. How do you feel about John Wall wanting to get off of the Rockets?
I mean, I'm not surprised. He had the IG story, you know, where, oh, I can't remember who, but they, you know, they put up a poll saying, you know, if John Wall should leave or not. And he, you know, said yes. And then he was at the Clippers games during the playoffs. And then now with, you know, this additional indication, I'm pretty sure that he wants to go. And I guess preferably he would like to go to the Clippers. The main question is what is the Clippers going to give to the Rockets in order to make that trade happen? I really don't know. Most of the players on the Clippers, or at least the vast majority, are older players. And if folks are very, you know, I guess passionate about quote-unquote timeline, then I don't really see many, if any, players that even get close to John Wall's salary that allow for the Rockets to have, you know, quote-unquote timeline with, you know, with any of the players that could be potentially traded for him.
Yeah, that package likely includes the four-year $64 million that the Clippers just gave to Luke Kennard, which really looks like a bad contract already, and it just got signed. And it probably includes, yeah, a couple of older players, veterans who almost certainly would be moved and if not bought out. And on top of that, you're probably giving up something else to the Clippers in order to do that. That's a really messy, difficult trade to make, especially from the Clippers' side. They just don't have salary, really, you know. And it just that $42 million tag for John Wall it's going to be really tough for any team to take on.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people are like super optimistic that the Rockets will have a third time where they trade a, you know, I guess equivalent Supermax, because Chris Paul was never Supermax. He just had a max extension because of his veteran status, as well as a, you know, a Westbrook situation where they are able to trade, you know, large, significant contracts in order to get someone else. I'm not that optimistic, but I mean, it can happen, I guess. I think probably the most realistic option is the Knicks, who have both draft or cap space, even though they are a potential contender in the Eastern Conference, as well as, you know, younger players who could potentially, you know, match up with the the time frame that Kevin Porter Jr. and, you know, whoever that we get for the number two or potentially the number one, hopefully not, pick. So whatever that, you know, however that sort of ends up, I just don't think that it's going to be as easy as some folks want it to be when it comes to John Wall. I feel like more realistically, we may have to wait a year or at least until the trade deadline in order to trade John Wall.
Yeah, and I actually think, according to Shams' reports earlier, it's funny that you also mentioned the Knicks, because the Knicks and the Clippers are two teams that are pretty much searching for point guards. There was report that the Clippers were interested in Lonzo Ball, and the Knicks were interested in trading for Colin Sexton. So I certainly think that John Wall is going to be like a contingency plan for most of these teams, and that alone makes it that much harder for a deal to get done, especially anytime soon. I think there's a really good chance that John Wall's on the opening day roster for the Rockets.
Yep, and I guess he'll have to like that for at least a little bit longer.
Yeah. Well, that's going to do it for this segment. On the next one, we are going to be talking about Sterling Brown, his Instagram Live. We're going to touch on Tad Brown joining the Sixers and maybe some expectations for the Rockets over the next couple of years.
Looking for a better way to rep H-Town? Be sure to check out ApolloHOU.com for Astros and Rockets apparel you can't find anywhere else. Use promo code LAUNCH for 10% off at checkout. Apollo HOU, all Houston, all original.
And continuing on here at the Launchpad Podcast presented by Apollo Media. If you enjoy the show, make sure you do us a favor, drop us a review. Let us know what you think of the show. Leave us some stars. We really appreciate that. On this segment, we're going to be talking about Sterling Brown, his Instagram. So there was a fan that came on, and this fan straight up asked Sterling Brown, or told Sterling Brown, you know that Jalen Green is the pick. So what do you think about that? And Sterling played this off really well. He didn't deny it. But he, you know, he goes on to, you know, talk about what he likes about Jalen Green's game and, kind of just gives a brief synopsis of that. And then you've also got, you know, Kevin Porter Jr. and Jalen Green, who seem to be forming this connection together. They're commenting on a lot of each other's Instagram photos and tweets and, you know, stuff like that. There seems to be this overwhelming sense that Jalen Green is the pick at number two. I worry that this could potentially lead to some sort of shenanigans or something if Evan Mobley winds up being the pick. But I feel like all of these different sources just are indicating to me that Jalen Green is the pick if they don't trade up. What are your thoughts on the, I guess, relationship that seems to have formed between Kevin Porter Jr. and Jalen Green and Sterling Brown's comments and all that?
Yeah, I guess I'm just sort of, I don't know. I feel as though the Jalen Green situation does have a lot of fire. Like you said, Kevin Porter Jr. has mentioned him quite a bit. Now Sterling Brown has mentioned him. And it seems as though, at least from two of the players' perspective, who knows who else, that they're, you know, they are really interested in having Jalen Green be picked. But I guess a lot of this just seems like, you know, the time of year where folks are just wanting to speculate, just to speculate, and the players and everyone who is involved with, you know, the lottery are essentially just trying to get folks interested in whatever, you know, Instagram story or Instagram live or Twitter live, whatever they're doing. Maybe I'm maybe pessimistic or fatalist about it, but I just don't think that, you know, very few people at this point know exactly who is going to be picked and what position. Jalen Green is likely going to, you know, be the number two pick. But I mean, now we're hearing that there's, you know, I guess, quote unquote, fire around the Rockets, you know, trading up to get Cade Cunningham. So I don't know. I don't want to seem like, oh, it won't happen, and that, you know, all of this stuff has just been, you know, games for people just to get folks, you know, excited about the NBA draft in a couple, in a, I guess, just over a week. But I just don't really see anything other than people, you know, just, you know, I guess playing with the fans when it comes to talking about Jalen Green.
It reminds me a lot of when, you know, a free agent will just tweet like the eyes emoji. And you're like, okay, this dude is, he thinks it's funny. There's a lot of people paying attention to this, you know, high caliber free agent, and they just tweet some eyes, you know, and the first, you know, 100 replies are all just like eyes back, like three more sets of eyes. And it just becomes this whole big, like social media, you know, extravaganza, like experiment type of thing where you're just trying to see if you can rile people up. And I think there's definitely an element of that in this whole Kevin Porter Jr., Jalen Green scenario. I think that, sure, I definitely think these guys are friends, and I think they would love to play together. I think, you know, they'd be an incredibly dynamic backcourt. But at the same time, I don't think Rafael Stone and Tillman Fertitta and Steven Silas are hinging all of their eggs on Kevin Porter Jr.'s opinion. That's not to say that Kevin Porter Jr. is not a valuable part to this team going forward. It's just he doesn't have that kind of say-so yet. And so you know, I do think that maybe Kevin Porter Jr. is trying to tip his cap a little bit and, you know, show his hand and say, hey, this is the guy that I like a lot, just in case you were wondering. But I don't think that it's any ultimate end-all be-all of the front office's plans.
Yeah, and I think the other thing to keep in mind, too, is that do Stone and Tillman want Kevin Porter Jr. to have that type of power where he's influencing the front office in his, I guess, essentially his third season, where he hasn't exactly had the best reputation so far, although I think it is improving. I don't think they want to have a James Harden situation for someone who's still on their rookie contract.
Exactly. No, I completely agree with that. I think there were a lot of lessons learned from the James Harden debacle. And I think that Rafael Stone was one of the voices who wasn't just going to tell James yes, who wasn't just going to say whatever you want. So I think moving forward, there's going to be a pretty big contrast to how things were handled previously. The front office has a really diverse group of talent making the decisions. They even added a couple more pieces last week, and I think that it's truly going to be like a think tank where everybody brings their ideas together, and you know, and they truly draft what's best for the team. They're not trying to appease a single player or anything like that. Speaking of front offices, Tad Brown yesterday signed with the 76ers as the CEO. You know, of course, Tad Brown, former Rockets CEO. And according to Jonathan Fagan of the Chronicle, both Daryl Morey and Tad Brown were given guaranteed contracts and will be paid by the Rockets even after taking positions with other organizations. And this was negotiated with the sale of the team to Tillman Fertitta. I think that's certainly an interesting aspect. Now, we know Daryl Morey left the team for family time, so to speak. Tad didn't really say why he was leaving the team, just said that he was, you know, going to move on to the next thing. Do you think that it's slimy or you know, just off in any way? Because Twitter seemed to think that Tad Brown doing this was a little bit sleazy. You know, what are your thoughts?
No. And I mean, should anyone be surprised about the situation? At least Tad had the decency to not say that he was, you know, going off to have extended family time, and then 2 weeks later turned around and got hired by the 76ers. I think at this point, you know, the Sixers are wanting to essentially have the folks that they couldn't get a couple of years ago when they were initially starting the process. I don't know, but it's just, I'm not surprised. And when it comes to, you know, it seemed as though Tad and Morey were, you know, close. They, you know, or at least I guess close considering how other front offices may or may not be in the NBA. So, you know, why wouldn't Morey want to try to, you know, get someone, and I guess the 76ers ownership group want to get someone who has a good relationship and had and was fundamental in the operational role within a, you know, within an organization that had until last year very good success. So no, and I don't think it's really slimy. I think it would have been more quote unquote slimy if, you know, he said the same thing as Morey, but maybe he learned from the lessons that Morey had after saying that and then going over to the 76ers, you know, 1 to 2 weeks later. I guess the only thing that's sort of concerning to me is that, you know, this is Les Alexander. You know, a lot of folks continue for whatever reason to have rose-colored glasses when it comes to him. But this is another thing where he has essentially, you know, sort of screwed the team. I mean, he has a loan, or I don't know if it's been paid off or not yet, or not, but he, you know, assisted by providing a loan to Tillman Fertitta in order to get the team. That is well known and documented. And then he essentially negotiated deals where, as part of the team being bought out, the Tillman has to keep and pay out completely the, you know, the former GM and the former, you know, president of operations for the team, even after they leave and go to another organization. That's really messed up. And I don't think people talk about that too much, but
yeah, no, really I tend to agree. I don't think that Tad going to the 76ers is, you know, any sort of slight towards the Rockets or any shade or anything like that. I think, does it suck to see your, you know, the leaders of your former front office go off to another team together after everything crumbled here? I mean, sure, I guess it is what it is. But ultimately, I mean, what do you expect? You know, Tad was with this team for a long time, and a, you know, big portion of that was with Daryl Morey. And they're close. And I agree with you, you know, the probably the most concerning part of all of this is that they're still getting paid by the Rockets and that they had that safety blanket. I think that being negotiated into the sale was certainly less looking out for his guys. And who knows, maybe that, you know, there was something going back to, around the time of the sale anyway, that hinted at, Morey and Brown leaving at some point. We can't really know that. And we won't, but it's fine. You know what I mean? Like, the Rockets are in a new era. They're moving forward with, you know, the second pick and some other young pieces, and they've got a first-time head coach, and they've got a first-time GM, and they're just kind of doing their thing now. So it doesn't really matter what's going on with all the people that left this place, because they left and they're gone. I mean, it happens to every team. So I don't see it as a big deal. And I guess I should have brought this up, prior to the Tad Brown talk, because it kind of pertains a little bit more to towards the younger generation that I was just speaking of. But going forward for the next few years, what do you expect for the Rockets? How do you see their next few years going? You know, they have the number two pick this year, so they've got their solid kind of building block to start with. But realistically, they're not making the playoffs this year or next year. So what do you think is a realistic expectation for the next couple of years?
I think there's a, you know, I won't say like the best case scenario. I think we can assume that, you know, at least getting in the play-in game next season would be the best case scenario, or even get like the seventh or eighth seed would be a nice, you know, thing to do. But I think that's very much optimistic. But I don't necessarily think that there'll be, you know, a 17 win team either. It really depends on one health and chemistry. I guess when it comes to Raphael Stone, the last several things are, you know, are trades and selections that he made. I mean, I think no one can say that KJ Martin wasn't his pick. You know, some folks were saying, oh, maybe that was Morey, but Morey was out the door and Stone could have, you know, picked anyone else. So I think that was a very good pick last draft, and he, you know, Martin has shown that he is really, really good. Or, you know, he has the potential to be really, really good in the future. I think all of the trades he's made, getting KPJ for essentially nothing, being able to bring in Olynyk, even though folks were, you know, bagging on it when it came to Oladipo, and Oladipo ultimately didn't even play in the playoffs. So, you know, I feel like the Rockets had a you know, a positive position there. And I feel like all of the like small moves, even though a lot of them were, you know, just a, you know, a need because of having like barely any players to actually play games and having folks play are injured all the time, that showed that at least from the front office perspective, we can see improvements, small and larger improvements over the next several years. And I feel like, you know, Silas, he really got a bad hand last season. And now that he's getting an entire summer to, you know, have mini camps, I know he's been in, I think, Orlando the last couple of days and has, you know, sort of after his time off has, you know, taken to looking at different players with Rafael Stone. I think that, you know, even if the Rockets don't necessarily get into the play-in or get into the playoffs, they will have a lot, a much better season than last year. Even if that means they're still like in the, you know, the bottom five or the, you know, the bottom 10 in the lottery. Ultimately, I think we have to just have a wait and see approach, but I feel like the nucleus that's being built around, you know, potentially, you know, Kevin Porter Jr., but definitely around whatever the pick that the Rockets have this NBA lottery, along with the other folks that have been brought in the last several years, will allow for the team to, I think, be in contention in maybe 2 to 3 seasons, maybe like 4 seasons at max. But I think that there is a good core around it, and it ultimately depends on health and chemistry.
Yeah, and for me, I see the next season and a half as getting off of bad contracts, playing well, and becoming attractive to a potential free agent. I don't have any guys in mind currently who I think the Rockets should target in 3 years. Obviously, I can't see that far in the future, but I think after you get off of John Wall's money, after you're off of Eric Gordon's contract, you kind of start to gear yourself towards, okay, we've got these guys on this rookie deal or this rookie scale contract, or young players on a fairly cheap contract. How do we, you know, take advantage of the fact that we do have these cheaper contracts, get one of these premier free agents, and then take that next step in the playoffs? And I think that happens sometime over the next 3 to 4 years. You know, obviously it's going to be a little bit hard to get off of some of this money, but it's not impossible. We've seen plenty of teams do it. You know, even Al Horford's contract, they were able to get off of that. So it's certainly doable. I think, yeah, 3 to 4 years, you could see this team pushing for a marquee free agent, trying to make a big splash in the playoffs. That's going to do it for this segment. Coming up, we are going to talk about Team USA and the finals, and get a little bit of insight there.
Looking for a better way to rep H-Town? Be sure to check out ApolloHOU.com for Astros and Rockets apparel you can't find anywhere else. Use promo code LAUNCH for 10% off at checkout. Apollo HOU, all Houston, all original.
All right, it is our last segment for the show. Again, we are presented by Apollo Media, the Launchpad Podcast. You can follow us on our Twitter account at Apollo Launchpad. And then also make sure that you subscribe on iTunes and Spotify, wherever it is that you get your podcasts. For our last segment, we're going to start talking about Team USA. They struggled mightily, to put it lightly, in their first couple of exhibition games. They played Nigeria in their first game, who was coached by Mike Brown, a longtime NBA coach. And they lost 90-87. And really, it looked like there was just a lack of comfortability, a lack of, I guess, a plan for execution, really offensively and defensively. Now, in the game against Nigeria, they did shoot a lot of free throws. They had over 30 free throws. I think it was 32, if I'm not mistaken. And they shot 40% from three, around 40% from three. So ultimately talent, you know, scored them some points, but they just could not stop a thing from Nigeria. Whenever Nigeria needed a bucket, they got it. You know, I think they shot 47% from three on 40 attempts, 20 of 42 was what they shot. And then, you know, in yesterday's game against Australia, the U.S. just looked lost. I mean, on both sides of the court for really the majority of the game, if not for Damian Lillard's hot first quarter, it would have been a lot worse than it was. There's been a lot of talk today about NBA players and the way that they're refereed in the NBA versus how they're refereed in international play. And it seems that a lot of these players are struggling mightily with all the extra contact and not drawing fouls thus far in their exhibition games. What do you think, what are your takeaways from Team USA's play so far? And what do you think it is that that's making them struggle?
I mean, I think that's what you just hinted about when it comes to the officiating is, you know, more or less it that, I mean, it's been an interesting experience watching them during these, you know, the prelims slash whatever you want to call them. And the team has just looked weird. And I think officiating has a lot to do with it. And I think it's more of a negative towards the NBA more than anything else. At this point, you know, one, the rest of the internationally, so many teams have caught up to the U.S. I mean, they were able to win today versus Argentina, but I think that the team or USA basketball has sort of rested on the laurels, if I can actually say that word correctly, when it comes to how much the NBA or how much the international game has caught up to the U.S. Mm-hmm. You know, previously most of the stars who were in the United, you know, who played in the NBA and were successful in the NBA were Americans, and now we're seeing, you know, folks like Jokic, like, you know, Luka, and, you know, a whole slew of players who are quite frankly at the same level or even better than a lot of the U.S. players, especially the ones who are able to play this season.
Yeah, I mean, Australia had six NBA players on their team. Yep. And they're, I mean, they were pretty decent players, especially, you know, in this international style that a lot of them are used to. You know, there's a couple of key differences that I think really are making the men's team struggle. The 3-second violation not being a thing is throwing the guards and the perimeter players from the men's national team just off kilter completely. These guys are like, they're driving to the basket straight into somebody, or they're posting up on us. They're getting a mismatch and posting up on somebody only to turn right around into another defender. And so that is really, you know, just kind of causing all kinds of chaos for Team USA. And the other thing that I think they're really struggling with, is defensively, they're not taking advantage of being able to have a big man camp in the paint, which, you know, part of their roster construction is kind of flawed in that sense, because they don't really have a lot of big men to begin with. And then half the time you're seeing, you know, Draymond Green pick up the point of attack, you know, player, the point guard or the initiator. Or you're seeing Jeremy Grant or Bam Adebayo get screened onto onto guards, and they won't play drop coverage. They're switching nearly everything. And they're just getting picked apart. I mean, they're not using their big men that they do have on the team effectively. And it looks kind of ugly. I mean, look, I get it. You've got Kevin Durant and Damian Lillard and Bradley Beal and Jason Tatum and all these guys. But at the end of the day, like you can't just throw them out there and say, hey, go in. You know, there's got to be some serious execution, especially, you know, a lot of these teams are, they know that they're coming into this game as an underdog. And so they're going to fight, you know, twice as hard as the most talented team and the heavy favorite in the tournament. And so these guys have a target on their back every night, and they're not so far stepping up to the plate.
Yeah. And I think, I guess I just wonder if, and I mean, maybe it's not affecting, you know, all of the international teams who are playing in these exhibitions or having the same issue, but I wonder how much is being impacted by so many of the players who would typically play in the, you know, Olympic Games being injured or just, you know, deciding not to play because of the condensed schedule for the NBA. Of course, internationally, they're playing pretty often, but not as often as, I guess, the condensed schedule that the NBA had this season. And, you know, I feel like if, you know, someone like James Harden was out there, I mean, I hate to mention him, but he's been, you know, pretty good and a great contributor for the Olympic team, and to lose some of those, you know, guys who would typically be sort of the stalwarts of the USA basketball because of injury or them just not wanting to play this season or this Olympic Games, that may be impacting them as well. But ultimately speaking, you know, Coach Pop needs to figure out a few things. It seems like he figured out a little bit during the Argentina game, but it's going to definitely hurt them with them having a smaller, you know, roster, especially with the 4 and 5 position.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are, I guess, you know, mentioning the schedule, the finals are still going on. And I think the idea of the NBA season was to get everything done before the Olympics, because it's always, you know, a big money opportunity for the league and stuff like that to have their guys go out there. But the finals are still going on right now. And tomorrow will be Game 4. The Suns are up 2-1. Giannis Antetokounmpo has been playing really well the last couple of games, despite coming back from that what seemed to be a gruesome injury. And, you know, Chris Paul had that electric Game 1. This has been a really good battle. You know, I know the first couple of games seemed like the Suns were going to steamroll and kind of, you know, Suns in 4, so to speak. But Giannis has really stepped up to the plate. It's been a really exciting series for the last two games. How do you feel about what's happened so far in the finals, and who are you rooting for?
So I'll answer that backwards. I'm not rooting for anyone. I don't like the Suns. I do not like the Bucks. I'm just rooting for no injuries. I mean, we already had a couple of injuries during the finals already. Unfortunately, I just want to have a good, you know, I just want to see a good competition between two teams, but I'm not going to root for anyone outside of the Rockets when it comes to playoff series.
I like that answer.
Yeah. But as for the series itself, I've been sort of hating on Coach Bud the last several weeks, and he sort of like my feelings towards him has sort of gone back and forth, but I feel like he did some sort of, you know, adjustments during the game to allow the team to be able to, you know, get that big win for Game 3, but I don't know. I feel like Giannis has definitely, you know, taken a leap when it comes to his ability and there isn't really a need, or I guess there isn't really any way for us to say like he's not playing well anymore. He has shown that, you know, outside of his three throw shooting, which who knows if that will ever get any better. Maybe that'll just be his Achilles heel compared to other players. But he, you know, I think he has really stepped up, and no one can really, you know, sort of dislike him for that. The other sort of concern that I have when it comes to this series is just, and I guess maybe this has been happening the whole playoffs, but it's definitely shining during this series, is that Booker has been especially inconsistent, I guess would be the term, when it comes to his game. Like some, you know, some games he's playing like absolutely stellar, but then other ones it's like Aiden and, you know, to some extent Chris Paul are having to you know, carry him through some of the wins. And, you know, for game three especially, like he wasn't, I mean, he was okay and good to a certain extent, but then he just like sort of trailed off towards the end, especially when the Bucks, you know, took the command of the game in the second half. So
yeah, and I think that's kind of what you see how the series has gone, right? Like, like in the games that the Suns are dominating, Devin Booker is just hitting his shots, and their offense is flowing really seamlessly. He makes things easier for Chris Paul and DeAndre Ayton. And then, you know, he sort of just, like you said, disappears a little bit. And this has kind of been throughout the entire playoffs where, you know, there would be stretches of the games where he would, you know, he might make a basket or two in a quarter, but you know, you see a guy like him who clearly is capable of hitting, you know, six, seven, eight shots in a quarter and just absolutely electrifying the Suns' offense. And then you see him kind of regress in those other moments and just, you know, kind of fade off. I think the remedy for that is getting Chris Paul to a position where he's not necessarily initiating the offense. He can kind of play as a secondary playmaker, because playmaking is a little bit of an underrated part of Devin Booker's game, and you know, he has looked okay during those moments where he's kind of fallen back as a scorer. He's still been okay as a playmaker, and the threat of Devin Booker alone is, you know, part of an offense. But it is, you know, it's his first playoffs. I'll give him a little bit of slack. But yeah, I mean, he has been very hot and cold, but his hot has been like insanely hot, you know. And so it's been really exciting to see when he is on. I think it's been an insanely electric series, and I'm hoping that it goes seven, and like you said, no injuries. Who do you think winning the finals means the most to? And I think I probably know the answer to this, but out of those top, you know, few guys from each team, who do you think it means the most to as far as their legacy is concerned?
I think if you don't say Chris Paul, then that's just, you don't really, you know, necessarily know basketball. But I think it also will have a significance when it comes to Giannis. Like if somehow the Bucks, after all of the drama and bad games and other things that have happened, you know, this playoffs, are able to, you know, come back from, I mean, it's not a big deficit 2-1 or, you know, 2-0, but come back from, you know, a deficit in the finals and somehow, you know, get a finals win. A lot of people will probably name Giannis as like a top 10 or top 50, you know, a top 10 player of all time because of his two, you know, MVPs, and then if he gets a finals MVP and stuff like that. But
yeah, I think there is something kind of I guess really low-key important for young players, and if they manage to win a championship early in their career, it really changes the rest of their career. Because if you imagine if Chris Paul got, you know, a championship in, say, his fifth or sixth season, it completely changes his legacy going forward. And this now would be like the cherry on top, right? But instead, Chris Paul has gone his entire career without even making the finals. And so now this is such a big achievement for him. But getting that out of the way at Giannis's age is going to, you know, take some pressure off of him. It's going to allow him to kind of just, you know, be Giannis. And who knows, maybe that leads him to another team. You know, like LeBron got a championship for Cleveland and then, you know, dipped and so on and so forth. Maybe that's something, but I think that's an underrated aspect to this whole series.
Yeah. And I think ultimately speaking, whoever wins, they'll have that admiration of their, you know, of the city for the rest of their careers and probably the rest of their lives, because, you know, Milwaukee has only won one championship, if I am recalling correctly, but it was more than three decades ago. Yeah. And the Suns have never won a championship. So whoever, you know, whichever team wins, they're going to have so much respect within their city. And even if they don't win, they're going to have a ton of respect. So yeah, I think relatively speaking, from a player's perspective, it's probably like Chris Paul and then Giannis and then everyone else. But when it comes to the team and just like legacy perspective, whoever wins, it's going to impact all of the players for whichever team significantly, and just like how they are seen within that city for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And like I said, game four is tomorrow. And I'm looking forward to a really exciting series. With that being said, that is going to do it for us tonight. If you haven't already, make sure that you subscribe on Apple or iTunes or Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you follow our Twitter account, Apollo HOU. We have blogs and merch and podcasts and all kinds of stuff, all Houston content. And yeah, we will see you on the next one.